This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Hoops Peterson, Greg Peterson, going to join us here in a little bit, Jensen Lewis. But we have a lot of football to discuss, including it was Black Monday. It's come and gone. We got a lot more on the table now for vacancies when it comes to head coaches, a couple as GMs. That's where we begin our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Old man Pete, I say that affectionately. Pete Carroll has been shown the door there in the main desert there in Las Vegas, as the Raiders have fired him after a league worst 3-14 season. The Raiders do have the number one pick coming up in the NFL draft. Pete's not going to be around here, Jensen, to help make that pick. Not a surprise. A little bit melancholy for me. I know that Pete Carroll still wants to coach, and that's why the firing is significant. It was not a mutual parting of the ways. They didn't soften the blow here. They had to remove Pete from the job because Jensen, he didn't want to give it up. And the Raiders and Tom Brady, Joe Spytek and company, they're going to go in another direction.
Yeah, right now DraftKings has Brian Flores plus $1.75 as the top option to be the next Raiders head football coach, seeing in other markets right around 36%. Cliff Kingsbury is in there as well. Remember the OC there from the Commanders, and then Mike McCarthy, your boy, Big Mike, also in there as well. A lot of the rumors over the weekend, Dave, and kind of percolating out here about how Tom Brady kind of wants to bring a little Patriot way to the West Coast there into the desert. So I would fully expect Brian Flores, not only here for Las Vegas, but certainly in some of these other openings, to get a lot of run too.
You know, I'm going to get to some of these fits as the week goes to, certainly with head coaches and where we think some good fits would be here, because those are going to affect your futures market, whether or not, you know, the way we like to wager as to quarterback, head coach, GM, kind of that stability tree, if you will. A lot of these teams we're talking about today are looking for that stability there. Those are curious names out there in Las Vegas. Some I like, some that I don't know would be a good match. In Arizona, they're looking for a new guy there as well. Jonathan Gannon has been shown the door after 3 years. Now, this one ended terribly this year. They ended the season on a 9-game losing skid. Talented defensive coordinator, certainly in his Philadelphia days when they went to a Super Bowl and almost got the job done there. Indifferent, I would say, after 3 years there. I think he's still well-regarded in the coaching ranks, but we talk about it, Jensen, sometimes a little bit too much too soon. Maybe that's the case there. And other people might say the franchise is really the problem and not the head coach.
Yeah. I mean, again, overall, you look at a couple of places, Arizona and in Cincinnati, you know, for any coach that's coming in there, and now we know that Cincinnati is going to retain Zach Taylor, at least to start the year. You know, you're looking at some dichotomies here. Arizona, do you have the weapons offensively and do you have the quarterback? That's a question that still needs to be answered. We know that that's the case in Cincinnati. How in the heck, Zach Taylor, do you not at least saddle up next to Joe Burrow for a day or two this offseason once everyone's kind of had a chance to decompress and say, all right, help me help you, the old Jerry Maguire line. What can I do to get this thing going and to get you reinvigorated? Because, Dave, we're only a handful of years removed from this Bengal team going to Arrowhead, beating a really loaded Kansas City Chiefs team with Patrick Mahomes on their home turf and going to the Super Bowl. It's not a lot of time, but boy, does it feel like a long time ago in some of those circles. But Zach Taylor's got to get it right. And I'm with you, man. Go spend some money on the offensive line. You do that,
yeah,
then dear God, he's going to pick some people apart.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They were oh so close to winning that Super Bowl against the Rams, right? And now Sean McVay's a made man, because when you win, it should matter. The results should matter. I'm not just a process guy. What did you actually do? And he did get them, Zach Taylor. Al Golden, of course, will come back now as a second year as their defense coordinator, and Duke Tobin is still going to be helping running things there. So that hierarchy is not changing in Cincinnati this year. So far in Tampa Bay, it's not changing. You know, I have a great affinity for Todd Bowles. Until this year, that's all they had done is win the South, even after Tom Brady had retired. But yet they didn't win it this year. They did collapse down the stretch. They did end their season under 500 at 8-9. And there have been calls from the fan base to move on from Todd Bowles. Todd had a message for the fans that are clamoring for his job to be removed.
All I can do is coach and be myself. You know, I've earned the chance. I've won 3 straight division titles, so that says a lot as far as I'm concerned. But I don't really have a message for fans other than true fans are true fans, and we're going to try to do our best to go out there and win for them. You know, they're going to feel how they feel, but that's not a coach's problem. A coach's problem is to make the team better.
I like that. And again, I know some people are going to say, you keep doing the same thing over and over, what's going to change? Well, winning 3 straight division titles, and he was the head coach for those 3 straight division titles, Jensen, that should have some merit to me. It should have some weight. We talk about Mike Tomlin never having a losing season, and somehow that's a punchline. Like, those are good things. So maybe I look at it differently. And if you say, well, they're not going to win a Super Bowl, and that's the end result, some people are process-oriented, others are result. I'm more to the result side. And I think the results overall have been pretty darn good. Where are you on that? And I will say this for Todd Bowles. If you start worrying about the fans, you're going to be a fan before you know it. And I think he's smart not to worry about what the fans are thinking.
It's a tale of two seasons in Tampa Bay, beginning first 8-9 games, right? Really a team we sort of looked at as maybe a dark horse candidate to get through the NFC postseason. And that last stanza, there were questions. Did he lose the locker room? Are guys not playing hard for him? Baker Mayfield came to, you know, his side and said, hey, no, this is on us. This is on us as the players. The coaches have done everything. And rarely, if ever, have we seen Todd Bowles get as emotional as he did the last couple of weeks, at least leading into the season finale. Tampa Bay selects 15th in the draft. Dave, they have a stout run defense. Their secondary has been good at times, but it's been the injury bug. They cannot stay healthy. How many significant injuries did they deal with offensively, even at the beginning of the year? If they have any semblance of health, this is a playoff team. So I think it would be a knee-jerk reaction to get rid of Todd Bowles at this point, knowing the pedigree. First time they haven't won the division, as you said, in 4 years. They should be able to bounce back. And I think, again, in a very, very winnable division there in the NFC South.
And they've had great coaches that he's hired that have gone on to be other head coaches, Liam Cohen, Dave Canales. Both those guys are in the playoffs too. So I think he should get credit for helping to cultivate those guys. And we see the success that they've had. Joe Shane there in New York. Interesting, because they're looking for a new head coach. And I think a lot of people thought, kind of like in Atlanta, maybe if you got rid of the head coach and Brian Daboll, you'd get rid of the GM. That's not the case there. This is interesting about, we talked about a little bit in hour number one, go back, listen on your time, wherever you get your podcast, that some organizations are going to give you the chance to make mistakes. Others, maybe not as many. Here's what Joe had to say about learning on the job.
You know, early on, I made mistakes. I'm fortunate to have great ownership here where you're allowed to stub your toe and try to course correct. And over the last couple of years, we've been able to add a franchise quarterback. You've been able to add a, you know, number one receiver in Malik Nabers, who, you know, again, I'm looking forward to getting him back. And there are, you know, the defensive line, the pass rushers, there's pieces in place that also make this an attractive job. So looking at where we're going, where the build is, what the plan is moving forward and seeing the vision through is why I think that's the case, Art.
Interesting. And I do like that, because sometimes people double down on stupid and, you know, I didn't do. Yeah, you made mistakes, right? And he's, I think, smart enough to say, because he's secure in where he is, Jensen, that, yeah, I've made them, but my boss has allowed me to course correct those. And he feels like that's where they are. Normally, you don't get the opportunity to make multiple coaching hires. He's going to have that luxury there in New York. You got to get this one right, because they're not going to let you make a third.
Okay. How long does Joe Shane have? And knowing that, yes, you had injury issues. You lost Malik Nabers early in the season. You made a quarterback change from Russell Wilson to Jackson Dart. The defense is actually okay. It's not super, but it's okay. You're in the wrong division. The wrong division to have a really – how much longer is the runway? You're again looking at picking – you could have had the number one pick. You're not going to have that now. You look at this division with the Eagles back in the postseason defending champs. The Cowboys, I think they're in a better position, and they're going to do some things this offseason. I would anticipate that. Mm-hmm. And the Commanders, I could not have been more snake bit as far as the injury bug than they were this year. So where are you? Are you that close in year two with Jackson Dart? I don't know, man. He better get it right this offseason, and they better win their first couple of games in the first 4 weeks of 2026.
I know they feel like with Scadabo and with Jackson Dart and with Malik Nabers that they've drafted properly the last couple of years to, if those guys stay healthy, and they were all injured. Jackson, of course, came back at the end of the year. If they're all healthy, they feel like that maybe that's why Joe still has that job, because those were obviously his picks and high picks to boot. Tua Tagovailoa, they gave him a lot of money down there. And because of that, the GM is no longer the GM. That's Chris Greer. He's been shown the door a long time ago. Tua's still there. That contract is still there. Tua, for his part, says it'd be, quote, dope to get a fresh start somewhere else when he was asked about that. Then he didn't want to elaborate any further. But basically saying, yeah, I'm open. You want to move me? Go ahead and move me. But guess what's not going anywhere? That contract, Jensen, that seems like quite the juxtaposition if you're Tua Tagovailoa.
Whoever the eventual GM is that's going to come in there, you not only have the quarterback question, but what do you do, and what is your primary objective after that? And what is the domino effect once you make the decision there? They pick 11th in the draft, Dave. They're going to have some options there, I think, depending on who wants to trade up in front of them to get in the top 10. But anxious to see what this GM hire is going to be. Troy Aikman heavily involved there. Going to be a fascinating organization this offseason.
Sean Payton said when he got to Denver, we're biting the bullet and I'm getting rid of Russell Wilson and we're going to eat the contract. I don't know if a new GM is going to have that latitude day one in Miami. It could be backup quarterback Tua Tagovailoa next year. Greg Hoops Peterson, what does he like on the college basketball docket? That is next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Tuesday morning. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you. We always love catching up twice a week with our guy, Greg Hoops Peterson. He's the host of the VSiN Coast to Coast Hoops podcast. Give him a follow on X at GUnit_81. And he is probably the president of Texas Roadhouse. I don't know. Do you have like some sort of honorary title, Greg, when you go to Texas Roadhouse?
I do not have an honorary suite quite yet, but you know what? Every time I'm there, I always get free bread, and that's all that matters.
I think we all get it, though.
Exactly. Everyone gets treated like the president when they're at Texas Roadhouse.
That's fantastic, buddy. I still haven't gone, Greg.
You are.
I will, though, one day.
Yeah, what? We got to get him in there. That's for sure. Yes. Hey, I know there's been a handful of weeks here we've had you, buddy, where it's been sort of the off the beaten path games where we really don't have any of the ranked on ranks. That is not the case today. We're starting to dive into it, especially in conference play. Let's begin with one that, I mean, this one could be potentially a track meet on paper, at least as far as where the scoring and the pace goes between Louisville and Duke. Where do you stand on this handicap here? Again, a top 20 matchup and one at the Yum Center there in downtown Louisville. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And for one, I will say, get used to this on Tuesdays. You don't get the biggest cards on Tuesdays, but you get like ACC, Big 10, Big 12 play. The big boys always come out on Tuesdays. So no need to worry about the beaten path here. But that said, I'm in on Duke. I know that Duke has been a little bit shakier to start ACC conference play, but it feels like every year they struggle with George Tech. I don't know how. I don't know why, but George Tech always gives them a tough game. I like them here, though, because Mikel Brown dealt with an injury for Louisville. That is their top facilitator. And with this Louisville team, they love to bomb it from three. Over 54% of their shots come from three-point range. That's number one in all of college basketball. And Duke, they are doing a good job of guarding the three. Teams are shooting less than 30.5% from three. And right now, what I think is the biggest weakness for Duke is really not having that main facilitating guard. I feel like you need a little bit more out of Caleb Foster, Isaiah Evans, but the best deodorant to that, guy by the name of Cameron Boozer, is averaging a double-double, leading the team with about 4.5 assists per game, does a bit of everything. And both of these teams are solid on defense. Like, Duke is still a top 15 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Louisville, top 30 team with that regard. We always talk about the Louisville offense, but the defense has been solid. So that total above 161, you mentioned it might be a track meet. Duke is more of a mid-tempo team. So I like the under, and I like Duke here as that one-point favorite.
Well, the people listening to you, Greg, so they're up to a point and a half right now here. I'm seeing pop at DraftKings and beyond. So maybe they're starting to pick up what you're putting down. We have a top 15 matchup in the Big 12 tonight. That's going to be in Houston. Maybe the kids on campus coming back, they're still a little bit dejected over how the college football playoff went for Guns Up from Texas Tech. Did the boys from Lubbock have any shot tonight to pull off an upset? Is about, I'm seeing a 6.5-point dog right now.
They have a chance? Yes. Do I think that they will do so? No. I have Houston as an 8-point favorite, so I'm willing to lay the 6.5 that I'm seeing right now. With Houston, you know that this defense is going to come to play, and you know that Houston is going to slow the game down. Back outside the top 300 in terms of total possessions per game, and what was encouraging from Houston over the weekend, it wasn't the most savory of performances against Cincinnati. They trailed much of that first half. They don't cover the spread, but Milo Suzan has been cold from three for them all season long, shooting less than 30% from three. He was one of the main men that got them to the title game a season ago. Really heated up in the second half of that game against Cincinnati. It's actually been Kingston Fleming and Emmanuel Sharp who have been the top scorers for Houston. So I think that that's big for them. And this Texas Tech team is just flat out and sloppy on defense. They're well outside the top 50 in terms of total points allowed on a per possession basis. JT Toppin has been rock solid, and yet they're outside the top 175 in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage. Meanwhile, Houston, still rock solid inside. Top five team in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage. Texas Tech playing a little bit more mid-tempo this year. I think Houston slows them down, finds a way to be able to cover the spread. So I like the under at a 141.5. I set my total more at a 138, and I'm willing to lay with Texas Tech. Or I'm willing to lay with Houston.
Right. All right. I love it. And again, it feels like first team to 70 might win that game, just knowing how Houston can really ground and pound there. Speaking of getting just the doors blown off, that's basically been every opponent for Michigan pretty much the entirety of the season. Greg, our friends at CBB Analytics, when you look at some of the advanced columns and numbers, it is nothing but forest green. Because it's a bunch of 100s, 99th percentiles here when you look at every statistical category for Michigan. It has been, 15, 20, 25-point victories here. But do we find maybe some regression at any point? And maybe is that tonight, Greg, when Michigan takes on Penn State?
Michigan in each of their last 10 games has won by at least 18 points. And they have won 9 of those games by 25-plus points. Like, you'd have to be an absolute schmuck for punishment to go in front of Michigan in this game. I'm a schmuck for punishment. I'm going in front of Michigan in this game. I set Penn State as a 21.5-point underdog. I personally grabbed this one. This was more around 24, 24.5. 22 is the absolute minimum I would be willing to take here. But I think I found one thing that Michigan might not do the world's greatest job of. They are 208th in the country in terms of turnovers per possession away from home. That was really a big weakness for them last year. Elie Cadu has helped clean things up. They were much worse with their turnovers a season ago. But I took the points with Penn State because they're so good on the turnover front. In terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, top 38 team in all of college basketball. Top 8 in terms of protecting the ball. They turn the ball over less than 9.5 times per game. You've been able to have Mingo along with Malik Tunka in the backcourt do a really good job as guards for this Penn State team, and they slow things down. They're about 270th in terms of total possessions per game. I'm not going and sprinkling the money line here or anything like that, but at 22 points, that was just enough for me to get in on a bet on Penn State, and I do think that inevitably, especially when you're playing games on the road, even for a team that has been as dominant as Michigan, you sometimes go through a little bit of a lull. Think back to those dominant UConn teams that won the back-to-back titles a few years ago. Typically, their struggles came in January. I'm taking the 22 year with Penn State and not a half a point less.
Let's go down to the Georgia-Florida line here. I am learning here in the Tennessee area country music. I don't listen to the Georgia-Florida line. Isn't that a very popular band, I do believe? What am I missing here, yes. Greg? Georgia's ranked. Florida, I know they're the reigning defending national champs here, but they're 9.5 point favorites against Georgia on this border war. Should that be as big as it is?
Absolutely. The best game for country music fans out there on this Tuesday. But that said, I took the 10 with Georgia, and I know that it's always one of those things where people love to be able to bet the unranked home team against a ranked road team. This number has just went too far, though. And for Florida, they have been a little bit unlucky. If you look at the luck factors on so many of these analytics sites, they're one of the bottom teams in all of college basketball because those games are decided by 5 points or fewer. They haven't pulled them out. Here's the reason why they haven't pulled them out, though. The guard play isn't good. They're outside the top 340 in terms of three-point shooting percentage. They're turning the ball over more than 14 times per game. And guess what Georgia does a good job of? Generating turnovers. 30th in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. Now you've got a Florida team that leads the country in rebound percentage. Ruben Chinyelu, Thomas Ha, Alex Condon, all these guys are giving you 7-plus rebounds per game. But even though Georgia doesn't necessarily have that one tremendous rebounder, they are a top 55 team in terms of rebound percentage. I think that that'll be enough for them to hold in there. I do think that the sloppiness, the overall turnovers, does lead you to an under. Georgia, not necessarily the most impressive three-point shooting team themselves, but this is also a Mike White revenge game. Keep in mind that he was the coach for Florida a few years ago, back when they lost to Oral Roberts in the NCAA tournament. He would love nothing more than to stick it to his old team. I don't know if he quite gets that level of revenge, but 10 just feels like too much. So I'm in on the under, and I'm willing to take those points with Georgia.
Greg, it feels so good to say everyone in the SEC is looking up at my Vanderbilt Commodores right now, undefeated and just an absolute juggernaut. We cannot say the same about their arch rival, the Tennessee Volunteers, and even worse so far this year have been the Texas Longhorns. A little recency bias, and again, our friends at CBBAnalytics.com, last five games, this feels like a mismatch, especially in the paint. Tennessee has been getting a boatload of points near the hoop. It has been really tough to come by for Texas. Where does that get you on the total in this game?
And to your point, this Tennessee Volunteers team, they're rebounding well over 40% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound. That's number one in all of college basketball. But for Texas, the two-point shooting percentage of teams has been high, but they're not allowing those second chances. They're actually 25th in terms of defensive rebound percentage. They brought in a few guys that have done a solid job down low. Dalen Swain, who followed Sean Miller on over from Xavier, has been a statue sufferer. And I do think that there's a little bit of positivity due for Trayvon Mark. Been around the block in college basketball, has been shooting less than 30% from three. I do think that Tennessee is still going to be solid on defense. They're a top 15 team, turns points a lot on a per possession basis. Feels like this number has just went a little bit too far. Getting double figures on Texas, I'm willing to take those points. I think Tennessee holds up on defense, but being outside the top 220 in terms of protecting the ball, they've been turning the ball over a lot. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on that under.
All right, I might need to go to Texas Roadhouse tonight, Greg, and just check out that bread since you're bragging and boasting about it so much. Greg Peterson, check out the VSiN Coast to Coast Hoops podcast. It's spectacular. Give him a follow on X at GUnit_81. We're back. Hold or fire. Wild Card Weekend Edition next.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. You can head into this new year, 2026, with a smarter betting strategy powered by VSiN Pro. You join VSiN Pro and get instant access to everything you need to make your informed bets each and every day. Sign up right now. You're going to get our daily best bets from all of our hosts and guests. Real-time DraftKings, circuit betting splits, AI-powered prop tools, matchup analysis, 24/7 video, full show replays on the VSiN Watch app. Plus, expert picks and prop data throughout the entire NFL second season and the college football playoffs continuing on Thursday. Get started today for just $9.99 or save 50% off an annual plan. Start betting smarter today at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Great having Greg Hoops Peterson in the last segment. We're going to have Zachary Cohen join us in the next segment, get caught up on some NBA news and notes, what games he likes, and also maybe a big trade coming down there in the ATL. We'll talk about that with Zach coming up next. But Jensen Lewis, on this Tuesday, as we like to do throughout the regular season, we have a special edition. It's the wild card round edition of Hold or Fire AFC Side.
Are we waiting on that bet? Or are we making that bet? This is Hold or Fire.
Three games in the AFC, three, of course, in the NFC as well. This is always the junior league, if you will. Like in Major League Baseball, the National League is the senior circuit. American League is the junior. I kind of look at it the same way, that the AFC is always kind of the junior. I know they don't use the same terminology. But let's look at the Buffalo Bills. They have it, in case you're wondering, in New York. They've never won a Super Bowl, right? Been there four straight years, didn't win one of them. Maybe this is the year, right? Because all of a sudden there's no Patrick Mahomes, there's no Joe Burrow, there's no Lamar Jackson, but there is a Josh Allen. There's also a Josh Allen that plays for the Jaguars. Jensen, the Bills are road favorites at a point and a half here. A Jaguar defense is better than people might know outside of Duval. Hold or fire on the Jags getting a point and a half?
Well, if you believe that history repeats itself, my stat of the day for you, the last 10 playoff underdogs that have more wins than their opponent are 8-2 straight up, 9-1 against the number. That fits for the Jacksonville Jaguars getting a point and a half, as you remember, winning just one more game in the regular season than the Buffalo Bills. I think this was the most shocking line when it came out, that really the Jags, point and a half dogs at home, considering their finishing stanza, how they've looked down the stretch, heck, how they've looked the entirety of the second half of the season. But this is the beauty of wild card weekend. Why do we kind of set aside what we saw in the regular season sometimes and look at a standalone matchup here? Okay, what does Buffalo do really well that Jacksonville is going to have to contend with? Well, Jacksonville is going to have to contend with the rushing yards leader in James Cook. They're going to have to deal with, you know, Josh Allen, if he is, you know, doing what he's usually done in the past with his legs, being able to create. But I think this comes down to how many stops can the Bills defense make against the Jaguar offense? And that to me is where, if you really want to not only take the historical trend that I just gave you, and then also the recency bias, man, I would lean Jacksonville plus 1.5 here, and maybe even on the money line as well to win this game outright. It just feels like right now, Jacksonville is a better overall team than Buffalo, even with what we've seen from the body of work of the regular season.
I see it the same way. I look at it and I go, if Jacksonville can get a couple, if it's a lower scoring game, I think that that's certainly going to favor Jacksonville. If the Bills can get up and down with their offense and play a shootout, that's exactly what they want to do. I'd fire today, too. Money line price, you can get there about even money in the Jaguars here, or you can take that point and a half at minus $1.12. I don't know that games will land one, and what that would mean is more than likely somebody goes for two. I don't know if we're to that point yet in the NFL postseason. The reason why I bring that up is, remember, Sean McDermott, in that game against the Eagles, said we were playing for the win right then and there. And I said right here in this program, I think it's easier to do that in a regular season game. I don't know that you have the same chutzpah, if you will, to do that in a postseason game. That's why that number 1.5, I might play the money lines there instead of just taking the points. Chargers and Patriots. This is a 7-2 matchup here. This number has not moved a whole lot here in the first 48 hours since this number was posted. 3.5 is the side. The total has gone up a little bit to 46.5. If you like the Bolts on the road getting 3.5, hold or fire?
Yeah, I'd fire. And I think, again, it is going to be a testament to which offensive line can hold up the longest. Both these units have issues, and we are going to get a little of the narrative, Dave. How many real good teams have the New England Patriots beaten this year? How many backup quarterbacks has Drake May and company beaten this year? Okay, win is a win is a win until it's not. And I think you and I have really kind of handicapped the AFC as it's pretty open season. You can make arguments for almost every team to come out of the AFC side. I think this matchup for the Chargers run game is one where if they are able to establish the line of scrimmage, boy, does that take a lot of pressure off of Justin Herbert and eliminates the pass rush, or at least keeps it in check long enough for play action to be a part of it, long enough for the Chargers to play the time of possession game. And what does Jim Harbaugh want to do? Wants to run the football, wants to shorten the game, wants to limit the possessions. If that is what the Chargers do, they are very live to go in and shock the world and beat the Patriots in Foxborough.
You know, I'm glad I didn't fire on it yesterday because the number was 46. The number is up to 46 and a half. I look at the under, just exactly what you said about Harbaugh running the football. And I don't know how, you know, advantageous it's going to be for the Patriots to try to throw the ball with their, you know, potential MVP and Drake May against this back four of the Chargers. So to me, this feels like a very close to the vest type game. So if you're getting 46 and a halfs out there, I'd fire if you like the under. I am surprised it's gone up. I don't know that it'll see 47, and I don't know that you're going to see four either. So if you're a Charger backer, and that's certainly where we're leaning today, I'd fire on those numbers here. If you like the dog plus the 3.5, I'd fire on the under too, if you can still get that hook. How about Monday night, the last of the three in the AFC? The Texans, we know how good that defense is. If you heard Matt Eumanns early in the program, he did raise a couple of red flags about that defense in recent weeks. Jensen, if you like the road favorite, and C.J. Stroud going up against those guys that play Renegade before the fourth quarter in the Steel City. They haven't lost on Monday Night Football since the 90s. Jensen, if you're going to back the favorite, do you hold or fire laying 3.5 today?
I have a feeling, and it's already there at circa down to 3, that you could probably wait. You could probably hold if you like the Texans side, because just of what you illuminated, there is going to be so much made of this win streak on Monday Night Football. Tomlin as a short dog at home in primetime has been huge. Okay, here's a fascinating trend for you. Texans opponents in which they've won their previous game went over the point total, which, hey, in the fourth quarter, you get 30-odd points between the Ravens and the Steelers for that to happen. That opponent then has won their previous game by less than or equal to 3 points. There has been a trend where it lines up for the Texans in this spot. Those teams have won 7 of their last 10, including 3 in a row. Now, I have a little trepidation about the hook. I don't know if I want that, so I'm going to hold here. If some people start to pile on the Steelers to get it down universally, Dave, any way you see this dipping below 3, you think it gets gobbled up there on the opposite side with the Texans?
I think it would get gobbled up, and I was saving this for this segment to say to Joe Friezo, our producer, we can put this in there for VSiN Pro subscribers. I have fired on this game, fired on it yesterday. I played the Steelers plus the 3.5 when that hook was still available, Jensen. I did gobble up that hook. As you mentioned, it's down to 3 in some spots. I love the Steelers in the spot. It got really dicey, obviously, with the Ravens getting the 4.5 last week. That got home, obviously, with a money line win. I really do like their chances to win this game outright. I do. And I know that DK Metcalf being back, some people are going to say, well, let's see how good he is against Stingley as an elite corner that they have on the other side. I do think he's going to make a big difference. I think, ironically, for the running game, which they've really struggled to get going here in recent weeks with Warren and company. I think you might see more of that and then open up the shots here with DK. I like the Steelers to possibly win this game outright. I did fire on the 3.5 and the Steelers. If that thing got down to 2.5, yeah, this does feel like a 3-point game to me. I could see people buying back quickly on the Texans here and seeing if this game lands 3. So Jensen, I know like people are like, well, it's just a 0.5 either way. That is such a key number. And for those reasons, if it did get under 3, you're right. It would get gobbled up on the Texas money. To me, if you like the Steelers, you find the hook, you fire. If you're not and you like the Texans, just wait and see if you can hold and get that number under 3, then pounce once that opportunity presents itself. All right, when we come back, let's talk some NBA with Zachary Cohen next. And I wonder if a young guy has gotten old in the ATL. We'll explain when we come back and talk the association with Zachary Cohen next, right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
Yeah.
We continue on this Tuesday morning. It is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Willis. Always love catching up with Zachary Cohen. Does a great job as our senior editor here at VSiN.com. The host of Hardwood Handicappers. Great to have Hardwood Handicappers back in your podcast life, wherever you get those podcasts. Give him a follow. One of the best handles on X, betting on X. And Zachary is kind enough to join us here in the Progressive Guest Line. Zach, I want to start off with what's going on in the ATL. So you see this news that the team and Trey Young are working on a deal to potentially get him out of the ATL. Year number 8, it's like amazing how quickly time flies. Is this one of those deals that when you look at the numbers, and I'm sure you have, you see they are so much better, at least this year, not only defensively, but just everywhere. They're better without Trey Young. Is this one of those deals where somebody else might need the offense and they get better by subtraction?
I actually am a little bit higher on Young than other people are. I think that there is a place for him on a winning team in this league. And I actually thought that this would work with the Hawks because I thought they did a really good job in the offseason of surrounding him with length and, you know, just players that could kind of cover up for his defensive deficiencies. And, you know, I think it started off really well when he was out of the lineup this year, but they really did kind of tail off on both ends of the floor towards the end of that, you know, Trey Youngless, you know, span that they had. So I kind of been curious to see what they're going to look like without him. I don't think they're going to be as good as other people think, but, you know, moving him off the books does at least open up a ton of flexibility in terms of continuing to kind of build out that roster. Because if you bring him in, if you bring in CJ McCollum, which is the rumor right now, is that they'd be moving him to Washington. That's a big expiring contract. You already have Kristaps Porzingis' big expiring contract on your books. So you'd just be seeing a lot of money off the sheet, you know, as early as this summer. And then you'd also have that really valuable, you know, first round draft pick from the New Orleans Pelicans that they got over the offseason, where they could potentially draft a game-changing guard, and this draft is full of them.
Yeah, right now, looking at next year here, the Hawks would be almost $70 million over the cap. So they got some work to do there for sure. I didn't think we would say this, though, Zach, when we said about the Thunder. I mean, are they going to lose this year? They eventually did lose, and then are they ever going to lose back-to-back? Somehow that happened. And here we are. The last 10, and Gary, wherever you are out there, great email about me mistakenly typing the Thunder as a 15.5-point underdog last night for our VSiN Pro Picks. An honest mistake. It didn't matter whether they were getting 15.5 or laying the 15.5. My goodness, they get the doors blown off them last night by a very, very beleaguered Charlotte Hornet team. But it's the bigger picture. So, Zach, that's where I want to go to you. 5-5 in their last 10, the Thunder are. What's happened here for them to regress so much from that really torrid start?
Yeah, 5-5 in the last 10 and 6-6 in the last 12. And if you just kind of look at some of the numbers, the shooting has really kind of fallen off a cliff from where it started at the beginning of the year. This team is, you know, I believe 22nd in the NBA over the last 12 games and 3-point makes per game. The 3-point percentage is very, very low. And they have been missing Isaiah Hartenstein, who's kind of their toughest player inside. So that's somebody that really impacts games on the offensive glass. He's a good passer, a solid finisher. So they're not 100% healthy right now, but I do think that this is just kind of a product of a scorching hot start. They were bound to kind of cool off a little bit. I don't view this team as head and shoulders above the, you know, the rest of the NBA, and I have not for a while. So I wouldn't say that this was expected. I didn't see them losing to the Hornets by 20 at home, but I definitely saw them slowing down a little bit. And I do think that the Western Conference is a little bit more open than people think, because I still think that when you look back to last year's postseason run, this is a team that can occasionally struggle outside of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander when it comes to actually putting the ball in the hole. And I think that we, you know, kind of saw them win that title, but without having to beat the Pacers in game 7, you know, struggling with a Nuggets team that isn't nearly as good as it is this season. And I just kind of wonder if we, you know, we kind of overrated them a little bit heading into the season. And after that hot start, I think that this is a team that can still lose a best of 7.
Let's talk about that a little bit more, because right now to win the West, it's OKC minus $1.25. And boy, I go, oh, is that a number that I'd want to have in pocket today at a smaller price point here? Or as you mentioned, the rest of the West might be catching up. San Antonio, we saw what they've been able to do against OKC individually here. They're 8-1. The Rockets are plus +850. The Nuggets, of course, once they get Jokic back, they're 5-1. So there's three other teams right now in single digits. Is that a fair price on OKC at this juncture? Or do you say, no, I think this is a real concern and some of those other price points might be more attractive?
Yeah, I just wouldn't want to have them at minus 125. If it was like plus 100 or better, I could see the argument for it. But I do think that Denver has a really good shot of winning the Western Conference. I mean, I actually took the Nuggets to win the NBA title at plus 850, like 4 days before Jokic went out. So great timing there. But I do think that Denver, now that they are getting healthy, they are going to start to be a factor. I know that, you know, Jokic has another 2-3 weeks on the shelf, but they got Christian Brown and Aaron Gordon back. And I think that we've kind of seen this season that that team is just way improved. When you look at their rotation, they did a really good job over the summer of kind of bringing in depth and, you know, bringing in some cheap pieces that fit really well around the Joker. And I do think that late in games, that Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic two-man game is still as lethal as ever. Murray looks great this season after, you know, starting the season off last year, looking really banged up and just kind of like a shell of himself. He has really kind of picked things up.
All right, Zach, you and I, aficionados of Love Island USA, and we will make our first analogy here with the Western Conference staying there. Can the Lakers be classified as a bombshell, even though they've kind of been that for a while? Where do we assess them, and maybe particularly in the matchup against the Pelicans tonight?
I think that the Lakers are going to be maybe like a flame in Casa Amor, but they're being left there pretty easily. I don't think that Los Angeles can, you know, win, you know, the Western Conference as currently constructed. The defense is just a huge, huge problem. I mean, you look at like the last 15 games, this is the second worst defense in the entire NBA. Like, this is a team that just can't get stops. I know that Austin Reeves is not out there right now, so that's hurting them a little bit offensively, but I just don't trust this team whatsoever. And I do think that the Pelicans are going to give them some trouble tonight, because I do think that New Orleans has been very, very good offensively ever since James Borrego took over as interim head coach. And I do think, like I said, Los Angeles is not reliable on the defensive end. So I could see the Pelicans just kind of generating easy looks at will. And I kind of like that the Pelicans have some length to throw on Luka Doncic. They might get Herb Jones back tonight. He's questionable. That would be really big because he's one of their best, you know, wing defenders. And this Lakers team's only 10-15-1 against the spread as a road favorite under J.J. Redick. And the Pelicans are 11-6 against the spread at home under James Borrego. Also 4-0 against the spread when facing teams with winning percentages of 60-70.
All right, I'm out on the Love Island analogies here. So, Zach, maybe you can help me out because I've never seen the show, but now I'm curious. Orlando against the Wizards, is there a player prop that you can make into a Love Island analogy?
Oh, man, I actually can't do it, but I mean, I have Anthony Black on the player prop market to go over 29.5 points, rebounds, and assists at minus 125. And I don't know the analogy. I guess that would be someone coming in from Casa Amor and winning the entire show. But Black has been one of the best young players in the NBA this season. I kind of think he's being slept on a little bit when talking about like blue chip young players in the entire league. Like, he's only 21 years old. He's posting some insane numbers this season. And when Jalen Suggs doesn't play, he has been absolutely sensational for this team. In the last 7 games that he has played without Suggs, he's averaging 25.3 points per game, 5.1 assists per game, and 4.9 rebounds per game. So that's 35.3 points, rebounds, and assists. We only need 30 tonight. And he's facing a Washington team that is 24th in the NBA at rim defense. Black scores 49% of his points at the basket. 27th in the NBA at above the break threes defensively. Black scores 20% of his points from there. And this is also a Wizards team that fouls a lot. They are bad guarding spot up shooters. They are bad guarding in transition. And I think that Black can hurt you in all of those different ways. So I think that offensively, he's going to have a really big game as a scorer. And then I also think he's going to make, you know, his teammates better. And I think he's going to, you know, impact the rebounds as well.
All right, Zach, last one from me, about 45 seconds with you here. Let's stay with the Magic. They currently occupy the 6th spot there in the Eastern Conference, and really not too much daylight between the 2 seed is the Celtics and the 6 seed, everyone chasing the Pistons, a resounding victory over the Knicks last night. Anyone that you would recommend, if you don't have it in a futures portfolio yet, anyone at a number they're currently at to add in one of those markets?
I do really like the Magic. I think that once Orlando gets Franz Wagner back, things are going to look a lot better. I mean, this is a team that just needs a little bit more, you know, defensive talent. Wagner's one of the better, you know, wing defenders in the league. And offensively, he provides so much with his ability to attack downhill. But, you know, as of right now, I kind of would hold put, like, and stay put in the Eastern Conference. But The Sixers are always interesting to me. I know I'm saying that as they come off a loss against the Nuggets, who were playing without anybody yesterday, but I do think that this Philly team has looked a little bit better. Joel Embiid looks a little bit healthier, and this is just a team that just will always be enticing to me if they are somehow healthy come postseason time.
Zach, all I have for your player prop today would be a quote from Passenger 57 when Wesley Snipes says to the bad guy, "Do you play roulette?" "Yes, I do. Always bet on black." I'm going to bet on Anthony Black tonight and go with that 29.5. I'm going to go with that one, Zach. Great stuff as always, and does a great job here at VSiN.com. Zach, we appreciate your time this morning. When we come back, Chaos Candidates, we've got them next right here. VSiN by the books.